Graham Sharp, banjo player, harmonica player, singer, songwriter with Steep Canyon Rangers. Interesting. I'd never, only in passing, and I say this because I don't know Graham Sharp, only in passing, maybe backstage a couple times. Very pleasant guy. But I was so happy to have the opportunity to talk to him about his music and particularly about this great new album out in the open by the Steep Canyon Rangers. Really happy to welcome to Unreal Bluegrass Graham Sharp. First time for Graham Sharp from the Steep Canyon Rangers. How are you doing?
My very first time. I'm doing great, man. How about you, Steve?
I'm doing good. Listen, the reason that we wanted to make contact with you is not just because big fans anyway, but the brand new album, as of the time we're speaking out in the open, just did drop a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
And, boy, it's another fine one. I just, I've been listening, which is how I prepare for these things. And every cut is just, the Steep Canyon Rangers have such a unique sound. A lot of it is from the vocals, granted.
You know, yeah.
But a big part of it is from the original songs. You guys have always had your own, created your, some covers. And there's a cover on this album. But you've always created original, and a lot of that is you.
Yeah, you know, I just kind of started songwriting out of necessity when we were first getting the band together. You know, we had one friend at the time when we were in college who had been kind of in a band together for a while. And from the very start, he was like, guys, we need to write our own songs, you know, if we're going to have a band. So, you know, we all just kind of fell to the task without any second thought about it. And, you know, it's been a long learning process as far as that goes, but I mean, you know, I think as much as with anything, you have some hits, you have some misses. I mean, not hits in the popular
sense. I understand what you're saying. Nobody in bluegrass world has hits on the top 40. You're talking about things that work and versus things that don't work.
Exactly. Yeah. Strikes versus gutter balls.
That's good. That's a better way.
But you know, I mean, hopefully you kind of learn what works and what sticks. But luckily, we have a band that, you know, we get to bounce things off of each other and hopefully kind of be a good sounding board for one another.
Do I, Graham, do I have this as the Steep Canyon Rangers, do I have this as the 10th album?
I think that's right.
I have them all. I didn't add them all up, and I'm not counting the ones you've done with other people, with Steve and things like that.
Yeah, then that'd be right. 10th, yeah, our 10th album.
You didn't realize it, did you?
No. Our very first was way back in like 2000, maybe. I remember just how blown away I was. We went and recorded with Curtis Birch.
Yeah, sure.
The Newgrass Revival.
Absolutely.
Agreed he was going to help us do our record. And, you know, from that moment on, it's just been really great recording experiences. Each one fairly unique. You know, we try to, I don't know, keep it fresh and I don't guess we've ever worked with the same producer two albums consecutively. So.
Well, it brings up a good point, Graham, is that one of the things we were talking off the air about, there's a couple of things you sent me into researching about, is Joe Henry on this, the producer on this one.
You know, Joe was an absolutely unknown quantity to me, and I'm ashamed to say that because he's been around. I mean, he was kind of making, you know, what people call Americana music now. He was kind of making that in the early 90s and, you know, before it was even really that. And he's a big fan of folk music, an aficionado, and a great artist in his own right, but he's kind of really made more of a name for himself as a producer. And after working with him, I can see why. He's got this unbelievably understated style that just kind of sets the pace and, you know, the kind of expectation and, lets it really flow from there.
Well, I read a lot about him because of his involvement in this album, and I've heard interviews with him that he did on NPR and talked about, you know, some of his moving back and forth, and everybody seems to have this North Carolina connection with the Steep Canyon Range at some point.
that is a vein that runs through it. Yeah.
And I think most people by now, Graham, know the origin of the band. You were one of the original members, I think, of the Steep Canyon Rangers from that connection in North Carolina.
That's right.
As I remember, yeah. the and this to Joe Henry. Now on this album, am I correct? And I'm just reading the liner notes.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of ways for the people listening to the program. You can record entire albums now by trading MP3s around and moving them around through the email. You can do them in a classical studio setting where you're sitting in between in little not cubicles but. And recording, a little box.
Yeah.
But do I read this correctly? And maybe I'm reading too much into it. That this is more of a almost kind of a live, interactive, or in a circle. I want to say maybe
it is. It is. I mean, it's 100% that way. And we honestly didn't know that we were going to be recording that way until we got to the studio, and just kind of walked in and started setting up. And it was just microphones lined up like we would have them on stage. We had the bass drum and the bass, the drums and the bass in their own little rooms, but we were all facing each other and we were all playing at the same time, but they were just isolating them for sound purposes. But every note that we sang and every note that we played was all done there in one room together. There's actually, it just released a video on the Bluegrass Situation site. Just put one up. We had a friend manage to come in for a day, and he caught four live takes from the record on video. So you can actually see it go down as it was. And that was, it was really, I think, a shot in the arm to us to really shake it up as far as the way we were recording and maybe what people were expecting and have a lot asked of you, and feel like you were able to deliver.
Here's to actually stand in a circle with this band, and here's the reason I bring this up. Number one, you are such an accomplished, I've seen you countless dozens of times on stage. You're so good on stage and presenting, but in a circle, the vocals from Steep Canyon Rangers are, let's just say, very full-throated. I mean, if you're standing around singing toward each other, nobody lays back, and there's four people that I count that contribute to different vocals and different leads, of course, but that must be an experience to be kind of standing around. And sure, you see each other all the time on the stage. It's more of a line. When I see it's mostly a line of microphones. But if you're kind of standing there in the same place singing, there's a lot of volume involved in the vocals behind all of the songs by the Steep Canyon Rangers.
Sure, and I mean, but I think, what really comes across in the record is just how natural it is in the delivery, what we were hoping for was that it would just feel natural and not forced. Sometimes if you're making a record and you've got a track of the music and you're standing there in a little room with headphones on and a microphone and no instrument in your hand, you're not playing, you don't have your the band around you, and it's just a step removed from it.
That would be hard.
People do things all sorts of different ways and get great performances, but I think for this record, that was the way we did it was the right call.
It's the blending of the vocals. When I say full-throated, I didn't mean that to suggest that anything was out of bounds. It's just to me that there must be a powerful feeling of standing around in a circle with this band you are now very comfortable with in all fashion, and just singing, not at each other, but, I'm trying to get the ambiance of what's happening here. It must have been impressive because the vocals on this album are they're just powerful. I mean, you and Woody and everybody else who sings vocals, there's no give on these. And the instrumentation I haven't even touched on yet, but the vocals are just, sometimes you think, my goodness, just power.
Well, it's just so interesting you say that because, as many records as we made, I mean, there's always inevitably a decent amount of nitpicking about getting the vocals in tune and making sure everything's lined up and everything just right. And I honestly don't think there was more than one or two discussions of, whether the harmonies were in tune or not. I mean, it was really just a very confident sort of feeling that Joe set, is how we're going to do it. You guys do it like this. You guys are good at this, and that's what we want.
And Graham, not just even the harmonies, which are unquestionably, but the dynamic ranges and the way you guys blend together now after so many years. It's not, the harmonies are a given, I think, with the Steep Canyon Rangers, but the dynamics of the singing, and everybody just kind of fits right in a perfect spot. And I just think that must have been more alive for you in a circle setting. And Joe, I think Joe had a great idea.
Yeah, it did. I think everything, I mean, I don't know, you know, there's also a video of one of the songs we did called Going Midwest on the record. And it's really just two voices and two guitars. I do a little bit with the banjo and sing, but it's primarily just two voices and two guitars. And, you know, got in there and we're kind of messing around with it and got it to where we liked it and got in front of the microphones and, you know, we're performing the song, but right. You know, thinking that, you know, if we mess this up, we'll probably take it again or something like that. And, got done with it on the first run through and Joe was sitting in the booth and he was just like, okay, that's it. You're done. You can't do this song anymore. That's it.
The album Out in the Open, there's 12 cuts. There's one cover, which I want to talk about why now and why you picked this Bob Dylan tune, because it isn't a real popular Bob Dylan tune. You had to find this on a re-release.
Right.
But before I get to that, of the other tunes then, you contribute, as I mentioned early on, and everybody does contribute to the writing, but you do write of the 11 tunes on this album that aren't, you know, you throw the Bob Dylan tune out.
Right.
You contribute to writing. That's a lot to say, but I mean, there's 9 tunes that either you write or co-write on this album.
Yeah.
That's pretty productive.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it is, and you know, when you never know if these things are going to work. I mean, there's a tune on the record that, you know, I had sung for Woody and Mike Ashworth maybe 2 years ago, and you know, they both loved it at the time, and we had sort of revisited it here and there and never really found a home for it or a pocket or a way or where it was going to stay and how we were going to do it. It's called Can't Get Home is the song. And but when we were in the studio, you know, Woody especially was just adamant that we were going to do that song and figure it out and find a way that it felt right. And, you know, that's when it's really good to have your mates there, really kind of, you know, propping you up and telling you, hey, this is going to work. Let's go for it.
Well, and Graham, if you just tuned in to listen, I'm talking to Graham Sharp, Steve Canyon Rangers. We're talking about Out in the Open, the brand new album, which is phenomenal. But on that particular tune you mentioned, Can't Get Home, there is a lyric in there. And by the way, it happens always. Albums don't come with lyrics very often anymore. So as I listen to these things and I write notes down, there's one line of a lyric in Can't Get Home, which, by the way, to me is the bluegrass song version of Thomas Wolfe's You Can't Go Home Again.
Yeah, maybe so.
I'm not saying it's intentional. I hear it that way. But there's a line in there about being on patrol in 1994, right?
I did my first tour in 94.
Okay. I wanted to ask you about that because later on in a totally different style of a song in Shenandoah Valley, you also mentioned Camp Lejeune, which is North Carolina. So I kept thinking, well, without seeing the entire lyrics in front of me, there's a military connection there that you reference. Both of those are your songs.
Yeah. You know, strangely enough, I did not write Can't Get Home with a, you know, and most people who've heard it and have talked about it with me, that song Can't Get Home, including Woody, just always assumed it was about a soldier. But I actually didn't write it about a soldier. I wrote it about being on tour.
Well, there's a lot of songs on this album too that are connected to being on the road, whether you know, actually written in that sense, or you can tell that there's, and I think that's normal for a band that makes its living on the road. You guys do a lot of dates throughout the year, so there's several things on here that are overtly about being on the road, and I took that as one of those. But I just happened, when I heard that phrasing of being on patrol, okay, it's not about a soldier, and then I heard the mention of Camp Lejeune in a very, very sparsely instrumental tune, Shenandoah Valley. I thought, well, I need to ask you about that.
I don't know about the Shenandoah Valley. I don't really remember writing that part of the tune, so I can't say that there was anything, you know, directly around that moment, other than just the fact that, you know, we're in North Carolina and a lot of people, I know plenty of people who've been down there through Camp Lejeune, so it's part of our strange reality here.
That's right. Listen, let me ask you about, and we'll get into some more of the songs here in a minute. We talked a little bit off the air about Sarah Siskin, who writes a lot of tunes with you.
Yeah, Sarah. She, she is. She was in Nashville for years. Spent a lot of years there, and really was a very successful songwriter in Nashville. Bluegrass folks may know her as she's married to Travis Book of the infamous String Dusters, and writes some songs for them as well, but they moved to Brevard, which is just, 40 minutes from where I am in Asheville. That's where half the band lives, and it was just a really natural thing to get together and write some songs, and she just has this wonderful, ear for a melody that is never too far out, but it's always has something that's distinctively her own in it, so... we wrote together for, I think two mornings, and out of that came really three songs for the record. So.
Yeah, one of my favorites, and I do like them all, is When She Was Mine, I think, that you wrote with Sarah.
Yeah.
And the lyric that I just keep coming back to is the days floated along, and there's another reference to every street corner band was playing our song. I'm not quoting the lyric correctly, but I just thought what a nice sentiment and a nice rhyme and just a nice melody. Besides, it's a pretty song.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I just had a sort of the opening sort of lick to it on the banjo that I'd written and some words to go with it, and really nowhere to go. Sat down with Sarah, and she just it didn't take very long at all, and just sort of threw out this idea for a chorus that took the song a whole new, wonderful place. So, very indebted to her for a lot of the stuff I love about this record.
In addition to listening to the record a lot, Ramsur Records, I was not familiar with at all before this album.
Right. So Ramsur Records is here in North Carolina. They're based in Concord, which is right outside of Charlotte. And they released... some of the Carolina Chocolate Drops records.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And they released several, I think all the Ava Brothers records before they moved to Columbia or wherever they are now. So they're very kind of North Carolina focused, oriented record label. And, it felt nice to bring that part of our operation sort of more back home. I think, sometimes in Nashville, when you're a known quantity, and people have already, a lot of people have just kind of made up their minds about you, based on, having worked with you, whatever, for a number of years and moving on to the next thing. And I think that's natural. But, I think as a band, we felt like we were still, we're still growing and still trying to grow and do new things musically. So to get together with a label that, maybe could have a little fresh perspective on that. It's been really nice.
It's the seventh cut on the album, Love Harder, is about basically when it's hard, you got to love harder. When things are difficult in a relationship, you got to love harder, and that's a great song. There's a lot of neat instrumentation, and I want to use this song to reference another tune that follows after it, oddly enough. There's a lot of great playing, as there is throughout the entire album, but I felt like there's a lot of great... instrumentation, your banjo on that tune, and Nikki, there's just some really neat passages where I feel like if I had to pick an instrumental cut from the album, that's the one I would say, listen, how great these guys are as musicians, because I don't ever want to underplay the fact that as a band, not only do you create original songs and you have a very unique vocal styling to the band, but you're also a great musician. So that one is... It kind of stops at one point, but the instrumentation I thought is so involved and so intricate on that particular cut on Love Harder.
Yeah, I feel like in general this record is leans more toward kind of a less is more instrumental approach. I mean, there's most of us or all of us playing on, most of the songs, throughout like a regular bluegrass record, but it's not quite as many, flashy moments and maybe a little more focus on the song. I think that probably came through Joe, but as opposed to like when we're on stage, it's the balance is definitely weighted towards a lot of the instrument stuff and the playing. But, yeah, I mean, Love Harder is a great tune to just kind of let everybody off the chain just a little bit and let them run with it.
Well, and the timing, and I love the sequence of songs on albums, and maybe I read too much into it. So you go right from that, which I think is as involved instrumentally as any tune on the album, then you go to the most sparse Shenandoah Valley, probably.
Yeah, with just a little plinky plinky.
There's a little something going on, and it's a neat. I was trying to think about how to describe it. I don't even want to try to put in anybody's head. And I listen to it so much, but this is one that you wrote. Describe Shenandoah Valley. What you were trying to capture.
Well, you know, we were riding up to a festival. And I was driving. Watermelon Park, up in Watermelon Park, I guess, Virginia, I think, and just driving along the banks of the Shenandoah, and it was beautiful. So this little ditty came into my head, and it was a pretty simple, kind of silly little thing. And just when we got there, I grabbed Woody and Mike Ashford and said, "Hey guys, let's sing this together." And you know, as soon as we started singing together, it was just beautiful. It made this just really neat trio. It's a little bit unlike anything we've ever done.
It is. Well, it's like a Western song.
Yeah, I mean, it's like kind of like a little ditty kind of thing almost. But, I mean, I don't know. You know, I'm not going to say it reminds me of it because I don't want to presume too much. But, you know, some of my favorite spots on, like, I don't know, like the John Hartford area.
Some of those little kind of unexpected things.
A little thing here. And, I didn't expect we'd ever record Shenandoah Valley, but we were in the studio and we were, you know, a good ways through the record, talking about what we wanted to do next, and Charles threw that out there as an idea, and we just kind of picked it up and ran with it, and it's very different, and it's got its lightheartedness before it takes kind of a more serious twist, you know, like the Camp Lejeune thing, but it's maybe a little bit of a palate cleanser is how it works on the record.
That's a good description. And really, it's you know, you want to grab a hold of that piece that you feel in the Shenandoah Valley and the Dilly Dally portion of it, so to speak. And then, you know, but that's not going to last. But here's a question I have for you is there's no credit for the whistler. Who's whistling? Right.
Mike Ashworth is our...
he's the whistler, okay.
Yeah, he's the whistler.
All right.
Fine whistler he is.
Let me ask you this then. Why you pick Let Me Die in My Footsteps, a Bob Dylan tune, which is not one that's easily findable. I mean, yeah, you can find it. It's been released now, but it wasn't originally released when he wrote it for the album he was writing it for. So my question to you is why that one and why now?
You know, when we were, you know, almost done with the record, and it happened, the whole record was fast. I mean, we recorded it in 3.5 days. We really were moving pretty quickly through stuff. And credit to Joe Henry. Never once felt rushed at all, but it was just moving at a really good pace. But we got to a point, and I guess Joe asked Woody, you know, if we did any covers, or, you know, if we had any covers we'd like to visit. And we had one that we had already done that we do in a lot of our live shows, which is a beautiful song called The Lakota Sioux by a guy named Matt Fockler that we ended up not using on the record. We play it a lot live, but this was just something very different. Something, you know, it's mostly voices. You know, it's a quartet, and that's something that, you know, when we were kind of coming up through the bluegrass ranks with the Rangers, we really focused on the quartet singing, so it's something that we, you know, we really enjoy doing, and it's a really nice sort of change of pace on an album and on a show and all that. So when we started doing it, it just felt right, you know. And now you sing the song, and I don't know how many folks are familiar with the song, but it's, you know, basically it's an anti-war song, but it's really a nuclear apocalypse.
The lyric you're talking about there is "Let me die in my footsteps before I go underground," and that is right. It's kind of about I was a kid then, I'm probably older than you, but go dig a fallout shelter in your backyard type of a concept.
Exactly right. Yeah. But I mean, you know, we sing it, and I mean, it really resonates with people.
I would imagine that's a song. I would imagine that's a song you sing, and people hear different things in it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's enough in there, but I mean, it really is. I think it's just a great call to living your life and embracing. Embracing life rather than living in fear.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. Live while you're upright, walking around, and worry about the rest of it later. There are, like I said, 12 songs on here. There's a couple that are to me, roadside anthem. Okay. Well, but I do talk to bands about, especially bands that have as many dates as the Steep Canyon Rangers, mm-hmm. about life on the road. That it has to influence. And you just mentioned Shenandoah Valley. You're on the road so much, you have to write songs that touch on the fact that you're traveling, and Roadside Anthem, I think even to a certain extent, Out in the Open, the title cut, there's always a longing to get out and away. That has to be from being on the road so much as your band is.
I think so. I mean, the speed we're traveling, that one is kind of written. I don't know. I was driving with my daughter in the car one day, and she had the window down and her hair was blowing, and that's kind of where that song started.
And that's the last cut on the album. Speed We're Traveling is like we're standing still. It's kind of like, in a relative sense, that the speed we're traveling, we're moving so fast, it's like we're standing still. But, that's interesting. So that was the germination of that song is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. I think you can't help but write about, what you know. I mean, you don't want every song to be about the same thing, but... I think there's a lot of aspects to it, and a lot of people spend their lives traveling for work or having to be away from the people they care about for one reason or another. So,
they're all blended. I wouldn't suggest that all these things are road travel related, and they're not in the least. But I do notice that theme in a couple songs that you can either make an allegory of, or you can say you actually are singing about being on the road, and then. And to the extent it means something else, it's really, Graham, this is a great album. And I've been a fan since the very first album, believe it or not. There used to be a lot more record stores back in those days, and I could nose around and find those things. And the Steep Canyon Rangers, you guys just keep getting better and stronger, and seeing you on stage so many times. And by the way, for the listeners, Graham Sharp will not be the one dancing up and down the line with a banjo. That would be Nikki, because banjos just don't travel that well.
No, they don't.
But Nikki's the mobile one. He's the one you gotta get out of the way and cut loose.
He's the guy who wears sneakers on stage.
That's right. Do you? We were mentioning that the album just came out a couple days before you and I are talking now. You must have a busy website. I'm sure people will be able to go there and find the album. And they can find it live, and then on that website, I assume you will tell me what that is, and they can find out where you're going to be.
Yeah, steepcanyon.com is our website. It's got all that. We have a pretty active Facebook page that I kind of run along with a couple other folks, and there's always new videos, and we do try to do lots of kind of live videos from being around backstage or working up songs or, different things like that. So. It's got all that on there. Yeah, we're pretty easy to find if people look for us. And, we're touring as much as we can these days. We got a good handful of dates with Steve Martin and Martin Short on a comedy show this year.
I saw that. I saw that last toward the end of last year, right before I went to Raleigh. I saw that.
Yeah. So we'll be doing a bit of that, but we're also just trying to get out there as much as we can and play these new songs for folks. It's really, refreshing for us to kind of have a fresh batch of stuff to take out there and see if it sinks or swims.
Did you think ever for a minute, Graham, when this band came about with bluegrass being difficult to let's say the bluegrass, I hate descriptions, but let's say the bluegrass genre hard to fit in with writing your original tunes and the sound, the vocals that you have are so different than everything else. Did you ever in a million years think that 10 albums later you would be at this stage of your career?
No, I absolutely never did. I mean, it was the farthest thing from my mind. We were just having so much fun. So that's all we were doing.
Well, it's working out good for you, man. Listen, I'll let you go. I know you got a million things going on, Graham Sharp, Steep Canyon Rangers, brand new album, Out in the Open, on Ramsar Records. It's an absolute right. keeper, brother. Thanks for taking time.
Steve, thanks for your time, man. I really appreciate it.
I'll see you. Bye.
All right. Take care.